Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It is Monday, October 23rd, I believe. Is that true?
Yes.
Yes, okay, I got the date right. We're happy about that. It's been a long few weeks. We're still steadily ramping up at Fifth Hammer Brewing Company. Again, I reiterate the thanks and appreciation that we have for the appreciation of the people that have been coming through. Getting to know our neighbors has been pretty awesome, and I'm delighted to be back in the brew house and creating things from concept to glass. I am also really excited that we just finished the middle of New York Cider Week. It's ciderweeknyc.com. There are a bunch of events happening this week. If you go there and check it out, including here on Heritage Radio Network, there is a panel of still cider makers going to be on Beer Sessions Radio tomorrow at 5 p.m. Stick around and listen to that because it should be pretty interesting. But also, kind of this overlapped with New York Rye Week, the first ever New York Rye Week, and I was able to serve some things over at NY Distilling or New York Distilling. Some really great panels and education things came out of it. I hope that we can do this every year, and it's been loads of fun on that, and I've been having fun brewing with rye and exploring rye. The spiciness of rye and the ways it can be expressed is pretty fun and delicious, and finding a balance on it is groovy.
And I will say, even if you're not in New York City, to check out some of the samplings and events for Cider Week, this is the perfect season to explore cider. So use it as an excuse to get out there and try something new that you haven't had.
Rachel.
Oh, sorry. This is not for a while, but it's a good time to start your ferments for the Ferment Festival going on November 18th. And it's Saturday, November 18th from 1 to 4 p.m. in Mayday Space in Brooklyn. So if you have anything planned, it's a big potluck fermentation meetup. So it's a good time to start those misos or any brews you might want to bring to that event.
And that is, if you want to find out more, you can go to fermentferment.wordpress.com. Also coming up sooner than later, November 4th is Learn to Homebrew Day from the American Homebrewers Association. So if you would either like to teach someone to homebrew, or if you yourself are interested in homebrewing, check out homebrewersassociation.org. They have, not only can you register your event, but you can find an event in your area. Last year they had 300 registered sites and 6,232 gallons of beer brewed. Wow. For National Homebrew Day. That we're actually hosting a homebrew competition at the brewery. It's Brewstoria from Queens, New York, is doing it this Saturday. It just reminded me to that there are competitions going on all the time, and that can also be found out on homebrewersassociation.org. They have a list of all the competitions that are going on.
That one at Brewstoria this time is excluding cider and meads. But in contrast to our guests today, our guests today are pretty all-inclusive, doing all sorts of ferments, and we're really excited to have them. One of New York City's newest breweries, but it started as a juicery. Well, let's talk a lot about that. Welcome to the show, Danny Oliver and Kevin Brothwaite.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, good night.
Hello, good night. Let's talk about your good morning. So how did Island to Island Brewery come about? What did it start as? And who are you? How did you get into fermentation?
Wait, that's so many questions. Oh, we'll start with one.
All right. I got them all. Yeah. So good morning. Island to Island Brewery got started a while ago because I was fat, sick, and nearly dead. No trademark infringement intended. I wasn't doing good. I was in a really bad place health-wise, and I thought that what I was doing was working for me, and I didn't know what was going on in the food industry. I didn't know that things like maltodextrin in my vitamins were making me fat and sick and unable to function. And I got pregnant. I started to make changes, and I started to educate myself about what my body needed to function. And as I made those changes, my body reacted very positively. And it started with juicing, taking in more natural foods, paying attention to where my food came from, and making juices out of it. And I was a bartender before that. And so I just naturally kind of crafted concoctions out of that. And people started asking me for more and more of it. And I noticed that the juice would change over time. And so I started reading books like Speed Brewing and other things about how to ferment, and going to Bitter and Esters and learning about that fermentation process. And realizing that it was really like this seed to spirit experience that was happening with food without us even doing anything to it. And then my parents thought I was going crazy for a while because I would always make them taste it until they started having memories pop up in their mind about what their grandmothers used to do, how they would take sorrel for the season and they would make juice out of it, but then they'd always take a little bit and put it on the cabinet in the side and put something called yeast in it. And it would, you know, if they drank it, make them go to sleep later on. So,
and your parents are from where?
They're from Trinidad and St. Martin. So this is like a normal thing that we do back home in the Caribbean. We make Christmas wines and we take them home to like different family houses. And we share our beers, what we call wine back home, with each other. So it was a normal thing for us. They didn't talk about it here because, you know, you buy your alcohol in the store here. So that's how it got started. I was sick. Then I started getting healthy, living off the land. My parents thought I was crazy. Then they saw what I was doing. They started to have memories come up again. And they realized that this was just a process that our family had been doing for a very long time. And because of the demand that people put on me in social media to give it to them and tell them what I was doing, I was kind of forced to start a business.
So you guys started as a juicery.
Yes, we started as a juicery.
So let's talk about the transition, because we've talked about this before and it's fascinating. It's always fascinating to build any kind of business from the ground up, but especially anything in alcohol. And in New York City, it's even more difficult, I think, because of all the extra zoning requirements and everything. But how was the transition from brewing to, from juice,
juicery.
Just a juice, to both a juicery and a brewery?
It was a nightmare. It was not easy. We started as a juicery, which, you know, most people think is easy and simple. It's not. Like, there's so much regulation in terms of sanitation and how to make the juice and the temperature of the juice and where it's produced. That in itself was a whole bunch of regulation. We even got, like, bottles of juice just dumped by the Department of Agriculture and Markets on us, which was really depressing. And from there, it naturally progressed into having yeasted bacteria, kombucha, made out of the juices, which was really tea, right, that fermented. And that freaked the city out even more than the juice. Like,
so you guys were under Department of Agriculture when you were a juicer?
No, no one knew who we belonged to. They couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure out if it was DOH or Department of Ag. So just no one would touch us. They were just like, we don't know what you're doing. We don't understand it. Stop. And we were just like, well, we don't know how to stop. And we know it's not illegal because other people do it. We just had to figure out how to do it.
So there was a period of stopping and going and figuring that out. And it got to the point where DOH came in and put their hands on their shoulder and they're like, we told you to stop doing this and don't do it anymore. So it fell on us to then educate the city about what we were doing. And, you know, even, you know, find sources, find FDA sources, find things that said that kombucha was safe, you know, even, you know, referencing KBI, that was part of the process. And then moving into the alcohol part, even that confused people. They're like, well, how can you have juice and alcohol? They're like, time. That's it. It's time and air. And in the air is the magical creatures called yeast that transform this, you know, nectar that's full of nutrients and minerals into something that helps the body to relax, not just heal, but to relax as well. And that's an important process.
Cool.
Yeah.
When you started making these sorrel things, or when your parents started being reminded of memories things, how far did, have you dove into the history of your, of your traditions?
Well, I was actually fully engaged in it, for a very long time and wasn't even aware of it. Like, I'm kind of writing a post now that's like the first drink that we've ever made that made us know we were going to make drinks for the rest of our lives. And I was in Trinidad at home with my family and we were cutting sorrel, which no one told me had like pricklies in it. And so my fingers were full of like this fiberglass pricklies and we were just cutting sorrel the whole evening away, bonding with each other. And then it turned into juice. And from the juice, my aunt put the yeast in it. We call it yeast back home. and she put it in the fridge, and then it was bubbly the next day. And I was like, this is magic. How did that happen? She made a sorrel lager that didn't take much time at all. And so from the time I was young, I was engaged in this process. No one called it by a special name. No one called it fermentation. It was just, this is the harvest, and this is what's left over from the harvest, and this is how we preserve it. Naturally, no one had a name for it. It wasn't something that was done as a business. Just every family had their own way of doing it, even without recipes. It was like, how much are you putting it? I don't know, just this much.
enough for the bubbles.
Enough, yeah. You put enough.
Speaking of enough, how much are you making right now? And what, tell us about your system and the kind of facility that you're working in.
Okay, so the system right now is one barrel. In terms of fermenters, we can do 6 barrels at one time. It was a hard process.
So are they all one barrel fermenters?
So we have 2 1.7 barrel fermenters. We have a 30-gallon plastic fermenters, 215, 114, and then buckets everywhere.
Okay. Awesome. So with the buckets, they're 5-gallon buckets. So are you doing like big batches and then splitting them down? And then are you ever separating them and doing different things to the different
with
buckets?
With the buckets, it's more going to be ciders, 1 week turnaround, maybe less than a week, 3 or 4 days, because it ferments so fast and we could just keep reusing it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of yeast are you using are you using on your cider? Is it cider week?
For the cider, American ale yeast. Mm-hmm. A lot of American ale yeast. We have the You're Crazy, which is sorrel, apple cider, hops, cinnamon, and American ale yeast, which we have a sample for you guys later.
We like samples. It's true.
So you guys have a
I had a lot of it last night. It's really good.
Did you go to the brewery?
I did. I ended up going to Ireland last night to do some research, and I got to have the You're Crazy, and it was really good. We had a lot of it.
Do you remember any of your research, or was it one of those?
I remember the stuff that tasted good. It was all of it.
And you guys have another cider on tap right now, Purple Rain?
Purple Rain, yes. That one ran away from us. So, like she was saying, when we were making juices, we would just, you know, have it for a certain amount of time and have to throw it away. And then she came in one day and was like, hey, let's add some cider yeast to it. I was like, no, we're not doing that. Just throw it out. She's like, no, we're going to do it. I was like, okay, whatever. You do whatever you have to do. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to say I told you so. It worked out. So she said, I told you so.
Yeah, so Purple Rain is our Purple Heart juice from House of Juice, which is one of our more popular juices, and it's been preserved as a cider.
Awesome.
And it is purple.
Really purple. Naturally.
Are you still making straight juices as House of Juice?
Yes, House of Juice still does exist. Unfortunately, location.
Right.
House of Juice was not right for the location where the brewery, juicery, fermentary is, but it is right for the city. And so we have a lot of corporate customers who really want healthy options for their events. And so that's where House of Juice has thrived.
And House of Juice turned to House of June before you turned into Island to Island.
Yeah.
So I met you when we were House of June, and you're very much pushing the June. Explain what June is really quickly.
So, J-U-N, like run, is it's a fermented beverage that's much like kombucha. It's a probiotic soda made from green tea and honey. It's very light. It's kind of like the champagne of kombucha. And it ferments very aggressively, and it eats alcohol. So if you're drinking too much and you need to sober up, or you don't want to have a hangover the next day, you drink Jun. It aggressively eats alcohol. And the evidence of this is the fact that it ferments in 3 days as opposed to 3 weeks like kombucha. So the bacteria aggressively consumes the alcohol that the yeast produce. And it's been one of our flagship ferments.
Very cool. With that, we are going to take a quick break. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back to Ferment About It. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with our friends Danny Oliver and Kevin Bothwaite of House of Juice, House of Jun, and most importantly and most recently, Island to Island Brewing Brewery. Island to Island Brewery, not brewing company, right?
Brewery.
Island to Island Brewery.
Brewery, yeah.
And you can visit them at where? Where's the, what's the address?
642 Rogers Avenue in the Prospect Lefferts Gardens neighborhood of Brooklyn, a.k.a. Flatbush.
Which is a pretty cool place to be, to have it and to have something like this. You get a lot of neighborhood people and you are hosting events, one of them being a lip-syncing event coming up. What's going on with that one? That's a fun one.
So it's our Halloween lip-sync and brew competition. It's our way of bringing two different communities together, both the beer enthusiasts and the people who don't necessarily know, you know, how beer is made, what goes into beer, what is beer. So music enthusiasts. And you can choose from two categories to compete in. It's either music, you lip sync your favorite artists, you dress up, you perform, and you've got to make the audience believe that you are that band. Or you choose the beer category and you still dress up, but you perform a beer commercial and make the audience believe that they're watching that commercial. And if you choose a New York City brewery to make a commercial about, wink, wink, you get extra points because none of us have commercials.
Heyo.
I love it.
And that's this Friday.
Yes.
Oh, at what time?
9 p.m.
9 p.m. All right. So audience be there or be square or... Yeah. Or,
squared.
Yeah, hey, Island Squared. Awkward segue to I want to talk about one of your newer beers on tap. The Island Squared Wild Saison. So I went to the brewery yesterday and some of the ingredients for this beer were just kind of like hanging out on the counter in like a lovely display. Can you tell us a little bit about this beer?
So this is a sugarcane grass water beer. And people keep asking us, like, oh, like, is it, like, sugarcane flavored? And we're like, no, it's sugarcane grass water. It's the actual water from the sugarcane grass. Think about wheatgrass. You drink that for nutrients. You drink sugarcane grass for the same nutrients. And we took 30 gallons of that water, a.k.a. juice, and we fermented it wildly. So it was left to sit for a while to its own devices, to its natural yeast, and ferment. And then we actually added Brett and Saison to it to help it ferment a little further and within safe conditions. And this is a completely 100% grass water beer, aside from the hops that we added to it. We didn't add any grain, so it's gluten-free. We didn't add any other fermentables or sugars, anything to that. It's just 100% what it came from naturally, which is very indigenous plant of the Caribbean.
Yeah, and this is beautiful, like, clear beer that's, well, not clear exactly, but, like, has clarity to it. And, yeah, it's, like, very alcoholic also.
Yes, it is.
It's, like, 8%.
Yeah, so I tried to not have it go so far, but when it comes, so it's not a fruit or a vegetable, it's a grass. But when it comes to things that are, like, produce fermentables that you don't have to extract the sugars from it like you do with malts, it tends to go a lot further, kind of like how ciders and
more,
wines
it's more
are.
Fermentable sugars.
Exactly. So the sugars are more available to the yeast, so they just keep going at it. And we got this Indian summer, so it was perfect for the Saison, but it just kind of kept going and going and going. And we had like a lull where we're like, okay, it's done. It's 6%. It's perfect. It's, you know, beer ABV. And we just couldn't figure out how to get it out to the public, whether we're going to bottle it or keg it, if we're going to send it out to other bars. And so it had an extra week to just kind of sit and age and get all nice and cozy in its fermenter. And it ended at 8%.
How do you get the water from the sugarcane? Are you grinding it in the same way that you would wheatgrass?
Yes and no. So yes, it's grinded the same way that wheatgrass is grinded, but much larger scale. So you couldn't do it in the same like small juicers. It's an actually like huge box, like maybe like a 2 foot,
two foot
box that has a really heavy metal press in it. So it is naturally cold pressed, but it goes through this metal press and juice shoots out one end and the husk goes out the other end. It's like wheatgrass times 100.
So is that box you only use for the sugarcane?
Yeah, it's okay. A special sugarcane press.
We saw these in Southeast Asia. In Hong Kong, they have them. And they had like just carts that's all they did is, well, they had them in other little sidewalk places, but they had carts that's all they did is the sugarcane juice. And it was a big metal box.
Yeah.
And the husk and all the fiber would come out one side and then the juice would come out in the cup.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was fascinating. I had no idea when we first saw one. I had no idea what it was. I'm like, what are they doing? Because you could see all the scraps around. Anyway, it's pretty cool because sugarcane is pretty durable.
Yes.
That's pretty nifty. So you don't use it for anything else. What? There's
it's
nothing I can think of.
It's just the one machine for the one produce item.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's like when you have the machete for the coconut water. Right. You don't use that machete for anything else but to cut coconuts.
That makes sense. Coconuts are the other thing.
Do you do any coconut ferments?
I want to, but coconuts are not as cheap
in
New York as they are in Trinidad. Trinidad, they're kind of free. They're like all around the ground. In New York, they've got to be imported, and raw coconut water is illegal in America, so there's all these other logistics. And I just came off of 3 illegal business stints. I think I want to kind of like rest for a little bit, make a little profit, and then think about jumping through another hurdle.
Raw coconut water is, so did you, people must pasteurize the coconut water, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fascinating. But when you buy coconut, like young coconuts that have the water in them, those are legal.
Those are legal, but they're also expensive to ship.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So my grandma turned 100 last year. We had a family reunion. So I bought coconut.
101 a month ago.
Yeah. But I bought a box of raw coconuts at the farmer's market. This was in Atlanta. And, but man, we had a heck of a time. We did not have a machete. So we had a heck of a time. Like we drilled into them with the drill, but it was kind of ridiculous.
And then put straws through the, through the holes.
My mother found that the best way is to like put it in a bag and just smash it with a hammer. And that usually works pretty well.
Yeah.
And the bag doesn't bust, right?
No, the bag does not bust.
Oh, nice. But yeah, those, challenging. Sugarcane, that I also bought sugarcane, actually, for the kids to chew on, and we also had a difficult time with that.
The chewing part is what I did when I was a kid.
Yeah, I love that. I can remember, well, I don't know where I was, but I was a little and we did it somewhere. Yeah, and it was awesome. So, anyway.
You do have a great diversity into the different ferments that you do, though. Maybe it's not coconut, but tell us about some of the other ferments and kind of where you've explored and where you kind of want to explore next, perhaps. Or what are in your six fermenters right now?
Nothing.
Nothing. We're still upgrading.
Okay. Okay.
Because you guys just upgrade. You just moved from a half barrel to a barrel.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We're literally in the middle of an upgrade now. And our brewer is like itching. Like he's posting the yeast that he's getting ready. And he's like ready to go. But the controller is just.
Yeah. The controller is giving me some problems.
So, you know, that's my master electrician over there. In terms of the kind of ferments we've done, I mean, this one, like publicly on social media, just kind of banned me from doing so many ferments.
No, that's not true. I didn't say you couldn't do ferments. I said, do not put your ferments in my new kegerator.
I can't put them in my refrigerator.
My new kegerator is for kegs, not bottles and bottles and bottles of stuff. A little segue. We just got new equipment and we switched it out on Saturday. So the two old refrigerators were just full of bottles. No labels, no nothing.
Ooh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
and she spent 2 hours just opening, trying for, you know, things not to explode or smelling what it is. And I was like, okay, no more. You buy your own refrigerator, put it in the basement. You put all your test batches in there. Leave my tap room alone and don't touch it.
So to answer the question, so I've done a rice grapefruit beer.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Which is a beer because there is grain, there's rice. And I actually got laughed at. Someone was like, is rice beer? That's not beer. But anything fermentable that's not apple, pear, or grape is beer.
By law.
So that was one of the fermentables I did. And then I actually tried to push it into a rice wine. And so that just exploded on me on Saturday.
Oh, no.
It was awesome. It tastes really good. I just strained it out. I've done a tamarind, forgive me, pulque, right?
Pulque.
Pulque.
Yeah.
Off of your book, Mary. And I was trying to make it really good, and I gave it to my parents, and they were like, no. This is not how you make tamarind anything. Because I left the seeds in it.
Oh.
And so they were just like, no, it brought up like really bad memories for them. So I remade it without the tamarind seeds, and I put some scotch bonnet in it with some chili flakes and some salt, pepper, sea salt. And that's been one of my favorite ferments to give to people just for free. Like, hey, taste this different thing that you don't know what it is.
Watermelon Saison.
Watermelon Saison was my favorite ferment. We wanted to make a watermelon beer, and we tasted some that were on the market, and there was no watermelon in them. They were just like watermelon flavored or watermelon-esque from the hops. And so we just printed it
on the can, watermelon.
Just printed it. And so we made a beer that had 32 pounds of watermelon in it, and it was only 14 gallons. So 32 pounds of watermelon. And it was very watermelon-y. It made you feel like if you were a juicer, which is what I always think about. If I'm a juicer and I'm on a juice fast and I want to be social, what would I drink? And it was a watermelon rye saison, hickory smoked rye saison. So it was. I had brisket and I had watermelon all at the same time while getting my booze on. So
that's all right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture, like, that's fascinating. It sounds delicious, and I wish I would have tried it.
It's an afternoon barbecue all at once.
I want to go back to the rice, though. How did you do what's your favorite way to work with rice?
So I didn't do it like sake. Like, people were like, oh, it's like sake. And I'm like, no, it's not like sake. Sake has a fungus on it. Mm-hmm. It's a special yeast that you use. I didn't do that at all. I basically did what my grandmother did. I cooked. I literally got some rice and some mint, and I put it in a pot and started cooking. And I suck at cooking. Like, he's the cook. He's the chef. I just deal with liquids. So I'm here pretending to cook, and I've just cooked my rice. I added my herbs. I added my my spices, and I added some fruit. I did strawberry and cranberry in it, and I just fermented it from there. Nothing special. I didn't spit in it. I didn't add any enzyme to it, to the first one, and it worked out. The second one I did add the alpha amylase
yep
to it, and that just helped it ferment a lot faster.
You probably got higher ABV. Higher ABV.
Yes. But I didn't do anything special other than add a little bit of enzyme to it. I didn't use the fungus or anything like that. I just treated it as if it was just any old beer, just using different ingredients.
Yeah.
Just, you know, fermenting the harvest.
I haven't done that much with rice. I did use rice powder solids. That's kind of my...
For the Beahoy.
Yeah. That's my cheater rice. But that's rice is something I'd like to explore more of.
Yeah, I do. I want to explore different kinds of rice,
yeah.
Especially forbidden rice, black rice. Mm-hmm. I really want to dive into it because rice is something that we eat a lot in my culture.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I have to look this up, but I feel like at GABF or somewhere, we had a rice beer that was using rice. I think it was from a Florida brewery because they grow a lot of rice there, and they actually use some of the rice that is grown in that area. So we do grow a lot of rice in this country. So,
We do? We've been trying to find a local rice producer.
I think only in probably not here, but in the southern state. I'm pretty sure they do in Florida and maybe some of the other southern states.
Okay.
So is my guess. Yeah, because there's that, we got that rice. Anyway, we make risotto in our pressure cooker in the winter time, and I got some rice, and you can use normal rice. You don't have to use special risotto rice. I think it was from one of the Carolinas.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
Does Bob's Red Mill do rice?
They probably do.
Check out Bob's Red Mill. One of Heritage Radio Network sponsors.
We do love all their products.
That's true. We are kind of. But their pancake mix, especially. I'm all about that pancake mix. Anyway, have you ever brewed with pancake mix? I think we should try that next.
They do make rice.
They do make rice, we found out.
Pancake rice.
Oh, yeah, they do the wild rice. Of course they have
rice. Breakfast stout. Mm-hmm. I mean,
breakfast stout.
People are brewing with donuts. We could do pancake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gluten-free. With maple syrup. I know some brewers hate when you make beers that taste like food, but sometimes. I'm really into it.
They're chatter monkeys.
Yeah, did you guys ever have... There was a Ben & Jerry's collaboration with one of the local breweries, and they made an ice cream stout, and it actually tasted amazing.
I just had one at Catfish the other day. I can't remember the brewery, but it was a chocolate stout with strawberry. It tasted like ice cream. It was amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, okay, New Belgium Brewing.
Yeah. I'm going to correct myself. I think that some rice is grown in Florida, but it's mostly in Arkansas, California, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Texas.
Jemiah, Texas.
Yes.
There you go.
You guys have a kitchen... in Island to Island Brewery, are you guys making food there, or is it mostly pop-ups here and there? Or is there a plan to?
I used to make food there, but it became more of a job than fun.
Yeah.
So we are looking for pop-ups. We had a pop-up there over the summer. It was biscuits and beer. So you would do biscuits with fried chicken or pulled porks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That went very well. So if anybody is looking for a place to do a pop-up, we're available. There's a dishwasher, an oven, new refrigeration.
Right. What do I have to say about that? So you guys are going to be you're going to get the one barrel in action very soon. Or it already
hopefully
is.
Hopefully by the end of the week.
Hopefully by the end of the week. And this is an electric system?
Yes.
Electric system. And you guys are brewing in the basement, something I find dear to my heart.
Yes.
Having spent a few years in the basement, the inebriated brewing Morlock coming out the basement only to say hi to people here and there. So the temperature control, you guys how is the temperature control on your fermenters?
So we're... gonna do a glycol system. Yeah, they're jacketed, so we're gonna do glycol system on it. We were thinking about building a room and mm-hmm. having a temperature control, but that's probably gonna be
phase two.
Yeah, because we're we want to crank out. We got our fermenters, got a few kegs today. Gonna get some more kegs in a week or two. So right now we're just itching.
Yeah, and most of what you're selling is from your location, but you hope to be with those kegs. Hopefully we'll see you guys around the city. More.
Yes, very soon.
And do you guys have a website?
Yeah, islandtoislandbrewery.com.
And if you want to visit, the tap rooms open what days?
Wednesday to Sunday. Yeah, Wednesday to Thursday we open at 4 p.m. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday we open at 2 p.m. People who like to, you know, hang out in Prospect Park and then come over for a beer. Earlier.
Yeah, because you're only a couple blocks from Prospect Park.
Yeah, three blocks.
You're close to the Q train, the 2 and the 5 train.
Yes.
And when we go from our house in Williamsburg, we take the B44 Express bus, the SBS bus.
Right there.
Yeah, those SBS buses are brilliant because they're really fast.
You know, as much transportation as there is around us, mm-hmm. and how close we are to like the museum and mm-hmm. the park, we get like excuses from people all the time about like, oh, it's so difficult for me to get there. Oh, I'm trying so hard to get there. And we're just like, but we're here at your location from where we came from. So why is it so difficult?
Yeah.
So ladies and gentlemen, it's not difficult. Go to the park, go to the museum, go to the gardens, and then come have a beer with us in our garden. We've got an open air bar. We've got a temperature control lounge. Got an outdoor courtyard. Like, I hope that like I thought about everything you could possibly want and need in a relaxation spot, including games like Jenga and pickup sticks.
And you guys have cool places to eat around. Yes. You guys have cool places to eat around too.
Yeah, and so. We allow people to bring in outside food. Like, we want you to come and support the neighborhood. Like, it just got deemed Little Caribbean. It got zoned Little Caribbean, and there's awesome. Like ton of Caribbean food places all around.
Yeah, because I marked some of my I keep Google Maps. I use Google Maps to keep track of, you know, all the places I want to go. So I have some marked.
Yeah, go to Zareli, go to Mango Seed, get some food from there, and then come by and drink your beers with us and eat your food and, you know, offer us a little taste.
No, we got to get back as the fifth hammer calms.
Absolutely. Your beers and the flavors that you go for and achieve are very inspiring.
Thank you very much for doing
what you do.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, and more transportation. This is just not to plug some of my friends who work for the city, but the new city bike expansion is coming to your neighborhood, and you guys let me park my bike there yesterday.
Yes.
It was really nice. You can bike there. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, there's a station right up on Bedford and Empire. It's like one block
city bike station.
City bike station. Cool. Yeah. And I was actually on the board for city bikes to be in the neighborhood. It took them forever, but they're there now. So
awesome. They finally are doing the expansion. Yeah.
Ride your city bikes over.
See, I love all the options. Anyway.
Like,
I'm not brave enough to bike. Rachel is not only learned to ride a bike this year, but she now bikes everywhere. Like, it's amazing. Yeah. I'm a huge bus person.
Yesterday.
Also, I think everybody should just learn to knit, because then bus and subway time are never wasted. You can always knit or crochet or whatever.
I gotta find something to do on a bike that isn't just biking. Yeah.
Side pop wheelies that you do all the time.
You gotta pay attention, Rachel. We do not. We want you to stay safe, okay?
Stay safe, Rachel. Go to islandtoislandbrewery.com and find out more. Cheers and foment about it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.